The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism. So tonight we have the gift of hearing an encouragement talk from our senior Dharma teacher, Jeannie Erlbaum.
So I've noticed that in this story we've been talking about all week, there are two characters that we haven't really explored. Now, one is the monk who was chanting the Diamond Sutra, conveniently enough, in Huainong's town in South China, right when he was about walking through and he could hear it. And I hadn't really thought about him at all until somebody mentioned him in a teacher's meeting this morning. But who I have been thinking a lot about is Huainong's mother, who all we know is, you know, she was frail, he made sure she was taken care of, and I just kept wondering, you know, how she felt about this, you know, her only son leaving and all of that. And it just, throughout the week, she's been coming back to me and back to me, and finally, she came back to me really strongly and said to me, "Do you want to hear my story?" And I said, I decided it wasn't too much of a deviation from her practice, so I said, "Yes, please." So I'm going to tell you what she told me. First of all, she said she wasn't really frail and elderly. She was a little below 40 and quite able to take care of herself. Thank you very much. And it was great that Huainong set up with one of his cousins to take over the woodcutting business and use some of the profits to take care of her. But really, she was a pretty peppy lady, and she would have been all right. And she said that she was actually wanted to go to a monastery when she was young, but because of family circumstances, she was in an arranged marriage, and her husband died right after she found out she was pregnant. So there she was, and she realized that her practice was raising this child to be. And she decided that she would keep up her practice, her formal practice, in her own way, but she would absolutely commit to this person who was coming through her. And it was Huainong, and she loved him. He was a blessing to her, she said. And they didn't have too many resources, but they did okay. And she said she got up very early every morning before he woke up to sit. And they spent their days together quite joyfully. And she said that at some point he realized she was getting up early to sit, so he would crawl out of bed and sit in her lap with her. And for a while he'd kind of crawl in and out of her lap, and she said over time he sat longer and longer. And she was pretty amazed at this little kid wanting to sit with her. And at some point he got too big for her lap, so she made him a little zafu set, a little kid zafu set. And he still continued to sit with her, not for long periods, but still pretty amazing, she said. And as he got older, he started sitting more and more. And she said she was a little worried about that. He wasn't like other kids. But she said she also saw some spark in him. And that, she said after a while that spark was growing. And she didn't know what to expect, but she thought it was probably pretty good. And as he got older, she also began to notice, she said, a hunger in him for something more. And he... She said that he was a good kid, and he started the woodcutting business and helped take care of the house with her, but he'd wander into town more and more often. And she was not entirely surprised when he came back one day and told her that he had encountered someone chanting what he called the Diamond Sutra. And he told her, "Mama, it was words that opened my mind and opened my heart." And this fellow, this monk, told me about his monastery way up in the north of China. And she knew right then that he had to go, and that spark in him was going to grow and grow, and he needed it to be nurtured, and that the hunger in him could not be satisfied there in the southern part of China. So he went with her blessing, she said. And she said she knew she would probably never see him again. And in some ways that broke her heart, but she said it would have broken her heart more to not know that he was fulfilling his dharma. She also told me that she was well taken care of by her nieces and nephews, and she had grandnieces and nephews, all of whom she helped take care of for many, many years. And she told me that she had one special grandniece who also liked climbing on her lap when she was meditating. And that grandniece took over Huineng's little zafuset. And that she, in her old age, was quite satisfied with her life. So I'm telling you this story partly because how could I not? And also, it's just to honor these two people in the story who seem in some way so inconsequential. But when we think about it, the ripple effects of that monk chanting the Diamond Sutra at that time and that place. And this mother who was actually Huineng's first Zen teacher and set him going for his own life, for his own path. And each of these people in their own way fulfilled their dharma. So I want to encourage you to know that no matter how insignificant you may feel, or how stuck you may feel, or deficient you may feel, that we all have our own dharma. And in fact, it's our right and our privilege, our challenge and our duty to fill that dharma role unique. And it's for us to explore and find out exactly what that is. And as there was some liturgy we read this morning, I can't remember which one, that said, be brave and be bold. And that's our job here. As we've been hearing all week from our teachers, that when you make a mistake or when you have a problem, that you receive this as a kernel of your dharma. This is the path to your way toward enlightenment. I always think, lately I've been saying to my own self, that each problem that arises is actually like a uniquely made koan for me. And that the reason it's so hard is because it's tailor-made, perfect for me. So I invite you to face with boldness and bravery each of these stumbling blocks that you think are the end, that big wall in front of you that you can't get past, and know that it may make you cry and it may make you shake, it may make you sweat like Ming, but it's there to serve you, and it will serve you. And this path that we're on has many, many benefits when we have that kind of ability to face our problems. Someone asked, I can't remember when, in one of the Dharma dialogues about, so how does this, I don't remember the wording, but something like, how will this help us be skillful in the world? And, you know, my response to that was, how could it not help us be skillful in the world? I mean, here we are sitting on a cushion for hours and hours doing this incredibly hard work. And maybe because I've been sitting so long and I've gotten to see some of the benefits in myself and others, that what it grows in us is a clear mind and a compassionate heart and a real knowing, not just a saying of it, but a real knowing of being one with all beings. We walk in this kin-in line, and every once in a while maybe we get a glimpse that we are one body. We're like a centipede walking together. And it's that felt sense. It's not some Ten Commandments or something we read in some fancy book, but it's that felt sense of being one body that makes us an ethical person, that makes us want to do our work in the world, impels us to do the work in the world. And we know how important it is at this time. I haven't read a newspaper since Friday, but the last time I looked, we weren't doing that great. And this world needed a lot of clear minds and compassionate hearts. So I am asking you, for all of us, for the children at the border, for the oceans and the trees, for your Dharma mates here, for your family at home, for all of us, please do the good work. It's hard work, but please, please do it. Thank you.